To support our work at the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show and the work of other independent creators like us, sign up to listen to the podcast on Nebula. Nebula is the creator-owned streaming platform that hosts great videos and podcasts like the one you're listening to now. Sign up today at nebula.tv/picture show, and you will get access to this podcast plus other great podcasts and videos. Sign up at Nebula and help support independent media creators. That's nebula.tv/picture show.
Hi, I'm Mortada.
And I'm Izzy. And welcome to the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show.
Hi, Izzy. We are almost in November. I had to dig up my hats yesterday because as a bald man, I need all the covering when I go out these days. It's getting cold, but it also means it's the best movie season of the year. We talked about Scorsese last week, and this week we're talking about someone else.
Miss Coppola. Miss Sophia. That's right. Yes. And thank God it's hat season, because summer is truly the worst season in New York. And I'm happy that it's done, not only because it's no longer sweaty outside, but also because, yes, we get to talk about films like Priscilla.
Yes.
You saw it for the first time, correct, at New York Film Festival?
Yes.
Sitting right next to me?
Yes, we're sitting right next to each other. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. My first impression, yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit in our preview or post-view of postscript of New York Film Festival.
Well,
but
you tell me like general thoughts about Sofia Coppola, like going into the movie, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I think Sofia Coppola, like everybody says, does this one thing very good, which is she tells the story of isolated young women. If you look at her movie, that's basically the, you know, quote unquote plot of every film she has made. And basically these women can be anywhere from teenage, like in Somewhere and The Beguiled, to like middle age, also The Beguiled. But most of them are teenage to 20s.
Yeah.
Except that movie with Bill Murray and
On the Rocks,
yeah,
which I recently rewatched.
Yes, that was the only one that's kind of like, she's making a movie about a grown-up woman, somebody with kids, which
and
I guess
coincidentally is probably her worst movie.
Yes. So I like some of her films. I had to do a podcast about Lost in Translation a couple of years ago now, and I was just surprised by how just beautifully shot that movie is and how funny it is. There were a lot of funny things that I don't remember, and it's a movie that, you know, tells you a really good story about isolation. I know some of the cultural things didn't age well a little bit in that movie, kind of like how they react to Japanese people, how Japanese people are not really in the film set in Tokyo, all these things, which sort of fits, this sort of brings us to the next thing. There were no Black people in The Beguiled, which is a movie about the American Civil War. And she is somebody who just knows this one thing, the experiences of young women of privilege, and she knows that thing very well. And that's, you know, what my favorite movie is about the most young woman in privilege ever in history, Marie Antoinette. That's my favorite. And she really knew how to tell that story. And I think Priscilla is just another one of those stories. It's a privileged young woman, isolated and sort of trying to break free, and whether or not she wants to break free, because some of her protagonists don't really want to break free.
Yes, that's fair. So, Priscilla, like you said, it kind of like sets up the plot of it, I think, falls exactly into what you were just talking about, which is like it's based on the memoir by Priscilla Presley, Elvis and Me, which is essentially just a book of little stories about how she met Elvis and what it was like living with Elvis up until their divorce in 1971 or two. This book came out in the 80s, like after he died. And so in many ways, like, it is the perfect subject matter for Sofia Coppola. Like, she was someone who, like, I am really interested in her as a filmmaker, and her films, like, interest me less, just because, like, films about young girls coming of age have never been a huge, like, interest for me. I don't know if that makes me, like, strange, but like, I just have never really cared about them that much.
But there are just a lot of movies about young people in general. And sometimes it's just like, it's the same old story. Young people are inherently not that interesting because they haven't lived yet.
Well, I think she makes it interesting. I think she makes it whimsical in a way that, like, when she talks about something she talks about a lot, and she's doing it a lot now because I think it relates to Priscilla, is she talks about how the film Rumblefish, her father's film, appealed to her as a young person because it was the first time she saw a movie about teenagers that was done artistically. Like, it wasn't done like a 16 Candles or kind of like just fun and the
or
like
Porky's.
Yeah, like the filmmaking aspect is sort of like secondary to kind of just like appealing to young people.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that she sort of like picked up where that, I haven't seen Rumblefish, but where that allegedly leaves off.
So
I do like that a lot. But yeah, like, I don't know. I just have never related to that subject matter, but the idea of it is really interesting to me. So I kind of wanted to, before going into Priscilla, I rewatched, I think, most of her films, except for, I didn't rewatch Lost in Translation. I didn't rewatch The Beguiled. But I found like doing that made Priscilla feel simultaneously exciting and frustrating because it's kind of like when I think it's exciting to see kind of an auteurish filmmaker doing the thing that they do best. And I think Priscilla is kind of a lot of that. But then it's also frustrating when they kind of make the same, not mistakes, because, you know, nothing's really a mistake, but like do the same things that you found frustrating in other films are repeated again as well. And so you're just kind of like, well, Sofia Coppola is Sofia Coppola-ing.
So tell me, what were the things that excited you about sort of relooking at all her movies and the so-called sort of opportunities maybe that you saw her repeat and repeat?
Yeah, well, sort of related to what I was saying earlier, like the aesthetic romanticism that she gives to young people and kind of how she lets them feel like they're dreaming and like they're what's happening to them, even though it's really small, it's like a crush or, you know, they want to make out for the first time or something like that. It's treated with respect. Like, she wants you to feel like that's a big deal because it is a big deal to teenagers when that happens to them and they go through all of those things. So I like how, for example, like in the beginning of Priscilla, she is kind of like walking through her high school, and you can tell like that's she's thinking about Elvis, and that's like the only thing she cares about, and she wants to go party with him so bad, and like you really do feel like you're in this girl's life. There, it's more complicated than that obviously in the film because there's that whole age element that is very present, but I think she does a good job of like putting you in her shoes, and she does that really well with a lot of her films. Like Marie Antoinette is obviously very much like that. I think what I find frustrating is like that she isn't kind of able to take the next step. It's like after you make that coming of age point, the film kind of like loses its steam in almost like all of her films that kind of address that. So it's sort of like, you know, you get with Elvis and you move into Graceland and life kind of continues, but there's no next evolution or if there is, it's kind of minimized. So it's like, I think adulthood is like a problem for her to like figure out how to display that with the same reverence that she gives teenagers.
Yeah, which I thought maybe we were going to get something different from her after On the Rocks, which was entirely not successful because it was about an adult, yeah. I think. So it proves the point you were just making. But she is entering her 50s and people don't change and filmmakers keep doing the same stories, even the ones we love. And that's okay because we as people also don't change and we're always obsessed with the same things. So I wondered for a little bit if she was going to give us something different, but you're right. She doesn't. She gives us exactly what she's obsessed with.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I think it's interesting what she does. This is something, so I wrote about Priscilla for Filmmaker magazine, like online. And this is something that the editor and I were talking about because we weren't sure how to like include this in a way that didn't feel like horribly psychoanalytic. But it's kind of like she in these two biopics, Marie Antoinette and Priscilla, the historical weight of that person is kind of like secondary. It's almost like incidental that it is a biopic about these two women because she's not using them to talk about like, oh, this is what fame does to like celebrity couples, or this is like why Marie Antoinette is reflective of 18th century politics or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
What it is just like she's using these two very famous women to talk about like these universal questions of girlhood and also like things that probably she would have experienced as the daughter of a very famous man. Like, all these girls' lives like all revolve around looming figures in history, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And so it's kind of like, in that sense, I think it's good because I think they make them more exciting biopics sometimes in a way, but it's also bad because it's kind of like they're important for a reason beyond the fact that they're teen girls.
Yeah, yes, yes.
So you do kind of like lose that.
Yeah. I mean, I found Priscilla, like I said, I don't always like her films. And the last few I haven't liked at all, On the Rocks or The Beguiled. But I found I liked this more than those. And I thought, like you said, it started really well. And we were really into the interiority of this woman, this young girl. I think she was 14, 15 when the film starts. And sort of understood what she is and what the isolation she's feeling because she's in another country. Her dad is in the army in Germany and sort of like that door that opens when she meets Elvis Presley and what that means and how determined it makes her to be in his life. Like, you know, the small things that she does, she's doing huge fights for somebody who's 15, like making her parents let her go live in Graceland as a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old. Like, that's huge to actually be able to convince that. And it needs, like, you know, fortitude and passion. And I think the film really shows you that, all of that. But also in a very, like, the understated Coppola way. Like, it's just, like, it's very understated. And the performance itself is very, very understated, which is kind of what she asks of her actors. Like, nobody ever emotes big time or does anything big. They just sort of like exist in front of the camera. And then the way that she frames them kind of tells you their story.
Yeah. I don't think she's ever given anyone a monologue.
No.
Which is really interesting. Okay. So when I was writing this thing, I read a lot of Priscilla's book.
Mm.
So I kind of got a sense of like how she adapted it, and I would say like 90% of the dialogue is lifted directly from the book. And it was interesting because a lot of the places where I was like, wow, I wish that would have been like built out more, were places where like there just wasn't dialogue in the book. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, give me an example of that.
So in the film, there's like the end of her time with Elvis is kind of depicted in a montage where she, it's like she moves to LA and is kind of living by herself at that point. And she starts taking karate. So you see her like briefly taking in a lesson, a karate lesson, and then she's briefly at dinner with a bunch of friends, including her karate instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the film, it's kind of implied like there's something going on there, or like she's made friends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like these, she finally
that's her next boyfriend,
her own right? friends. Yeah. No, they had an affair in real life.
Yeah.
And Priscilla talks about this in the book, and she was like, you know, this man like introduced me to all of his friends, and he like took me to see all of these different movies that I hadn't seen before. And he, you know, like opened up this whole, like I went to tournaments with him and like met all these new people, and like karate becomes this huge part of her life. But she just kind of describes it like straight up. Like she just tells exactly kind of what he did and the role he played in her life. But there isn't a scene that she writes. Like there isn't, they don't have a conversation in the book the way that she does with Elvis.
Okay, so it's got like, it.
So part of me is like, did you just like, I want to know how that part was thought about in the adaptation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where it's like, there isn't something to like lift directly, but it like also doesn't really go in depth into what Priscilla talks about in the book. So I'm like, was Priscilla involved? Did she not want that aspect highlighted?
Did
she just not feel comfortable like putting words in her mouth? I don't know. There's a bunch of questions I would have about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the thing when you do a sort of authorized biography or authorized biopic, in that you have to make sure you don't offend the subject who you need to come out and say the movie's great and go to all the press events with you. So, but I agree that that would have made the ending of Priscilla, especially the last half hour, so much more interesting than what it is, because it's kind of a whimper. She leaves it and then she leaves him, and then "I Will Always Love You" plays in the background. I'm just like, come on. Like, we all love Dolly Parton, but really?
I know. It's really funny. It's so corny.
Yeah.
But I think she means it like really sincerely. Because that's what's funny about Priscilla too, is like Priscilla still like adamantly says that she loves this man, which I'm like, why? But okay.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, the things that the movie's getting praised for is that people have called it that it's showing Elvis's dark side. And I think you and I talked about this after we watched the movie, that it's not that dark. Like, okay, he was kind of like, what are the bad things he did? He fell in love with an underage girl, but actually didn't sleep with her. And then he sort of saw her as a Madonna. And so after she gave him a child, he didn't want to sleep with her. And he was controlling and maybe put her in a gilded cage and not
gave her pills.
Gave her pills, things like that.
Emotionally manipulative.
Yeah. And those are all bad things. I'm not saying those are good things, but like even that is not presented darkly enough. It's presented in this way that's kind of pleasing and aesthetically pleasing. And, you know,
well, I think it's just for folks who maybe spend a lot of time like thinking about Hollywood marriages, especially from that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that's like pretty typical.
Yes. I mean,
for like every man who was very powerful, like would have treated his wife that way.
Yeah.
At that time, if not worse, honestly.
No. And I know that people don't want the actual dark side, because I think that Marilyn biopic last year, what is it called? Blonde sort of showed maybe a darker side, and that wasn't great. I get it. But here, I didn't feel it was that dark at all.
No.
Like, throughout this whole thing, they are presented as two people in love. And the fact that somebody, you know, whatever, doesn't sleep with you, is not, but still loves you, is not like this big thing. It's an experience that a lot of people go through. And I didn't find the specificity in this film of presenting this dark Elvis.
I think that's more about how people, I think it's bizarre that so many people left the movie thinking it was dark, because I do think like it paints a very kind of bleak domestic picture, but I don't think it's necessarily darker than Baz Luhrmann's Elvis, actually, because that's like, oh yeah, you're fucked.
Yes.
Like your life is crazy and pretty bad.
You're in debt, you're on drugs, you're getting bloated. All of that is in the Baz Luhrmann story.
This
man who you trusted really fucked you up and fucked up your life.
But this one, like, I don't think the point is to be dark. I think the point is just to kind of say, like, to present the contradictions of their relationship, which is like, it probably shouldn't have happened in the first place because of their ages, but at the same time, like, they ended up really cherishing each other in a really sincere way, even though it was never like quite as reciprocal as it should have been or equal as it should have been. So it's like strange. It's a very strange marriage. And sometimes I think the film does that really well, but sometimes it's, I just think like that third part, the third act where she gets out of it, I was like, how did that happen? It happens in like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it just like she just decides one day. And you're right. Then you ask, well, why didn't you decide 3 years ago or 5 years ago? Like, but yes, the building of the relationship at the beginning is the best thing about this movie. The sort of like this young girl falling in love with Elvis and the idea of Elvis and why she would do that, presenting her as isolated in Germany and all of that. And that's the film's strongest point. But I also, just throughout it, I felt like, is that all there is? I just didn't think any of it was that interesting. And maybe it's just not the type of movie I like in the end. It's maybe too understated for my taste. It may be too sort of gliding. It just glides through. And it doesn't elicit any emotions, or it didn't in me at least. And maybe that's just the way that Coppola directs.
I think I pretty much agree. I think I definitely liked it more than you did. But I think that first half is like the perfect summation of all of the themes that she really likes. And so that is kind of why it's so strong. Like, I was surprised by how much I was thinking about the Bling Ring while I was watching it.
Oh, wow.
In the beginning.
This I need to hear.
Because, yeah, I know. I know everybody's like a Bling Ring hater, but I really like Bling Ring. And I think what that film does really successfully is kind of present why normal kids are so attracted to fame and money and like how kind of tempting that can be to just like be plucked, especially the way that everything is framed and kind of set, the production design of it, like the German world that they live in is so gray. Everything is so colorless and unattractive. And then she kind of gets plucked out of that world and taken to Graceland, or like taken to his room where there's like movie posters, and like they go to Vegas and it's so like thrilling, and she gets to wear these new outfits and all of these things. And it's like, of course, you know what I mean? Like, I think Sofia Coppola is like uniquely set up to understand that dynamic of like what the appeal of the rich and famous is, and like how people get so easily ensnared by it.
Yeah.
And so Bling Ring does that obviously, but I think this does it really well in a kind of, in a different way than Marie Antoinette does, because Marie Antoinette like also came from that world. So it wasn't the same exactly. So I liked that aspect of it.
Yeah. I think those Vegas scenes are very memorable. Also memorable are the scenes where they basically do the Sofia Coppola version of the shop and model montage where they go to stores and he makes her put on clothes and then he approves or disapproves. And I think the way that she's costumed, not just what she's wearing, but also the hair, which is Priscilla's hair, the high sort of... Mm-hmm. The hair really high on her head, and the way the actor Jacob Elordi, so much taller than Priscilla, Kaylee Spaney, is just makes him like, it's as if he's playing with a doll, especially in those scenes. And that sort of just the interaction, the physical interaction between them, not anything they were doing, but just their physical size. At that point, she looked like a little doll who has too much hair for her frame and wearing, you know, clothes that are maybe too big or too sophisticated. She even says that for her. And then he is just sort of like the Pygmalion, of who's trying to mold her into what he wants. And those scenes, I thought, were pretty great.
Yeah. What did you think of the performances in general?
I mean, the performances were fine. It's like it's a Coppola directed performances where it's about being still and it's about posing. It's about how you pose in the frame as opposed to showing emotion, which is fine. It fits her aesthetic. But I also just both of them left me very cold. Like, I didn't think Elrodi was a great Elvis, especially coming after Austin Butler, who I loved. And I know, but it's a completely different take. And I think his performance fits the Sofia Coppola, sort of what she wants from her actors. Like, he was a good director's vessel to tell this story with his physicality, with the way he stands and moves in the frame. And that's all she asks of her actors. The same with Kaylee Spaney. Again, it's very understated. And, you know, Priscilla, like Elvis and Priscilla are these legendary people in history, right? Like, we all have ideas about them. We've all seen them. And I just don't think they got the legendary part, but I don't think that's what they were going for anyway. They were just giving us the confused teenage girl and the slightly smarmy man she met.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of what I was talking about before, where you kind of like, you get a version of the story, but the historical significance of the story is so muted with her retellings of it. Yeah, I kind of agree. I actually think I prefer this Elvis to Baz Luhrmann, but I think we had maybe disagreed about that film generally the first time we both saw it. But yes, I think what I liked about Jacob Elordi, is that how you say
it?
Oh,
it's not Elrodi, Elordi. Okay, I don't know.
I actually don't.
I think what you said is better than what is. See, sounds more correct than what I said.
Well, Jacob, our friend, our good old pal Jake, what I loved about him, I just think it's a good argument for like treating these characters as just characters as opposed to like like kind of going down the Austin Butler, which I think was like a truly cartoonish I don't mean his performance was, but I mean like the way that he sold his performance was like so cartoonish, and like I changed my voice and like all of that kind of shit, like there's just the way that it kind of ballooned out into this.
Yeah, he like, comes from the Gaga school of press.
Yes, press. exactly. Yeah, so like I think it's a good counterpoint to that of just like I'm gonna treat this person as a person. And I liked what he said in the press conference where he was like, I'm using this voice with you like in this press conference, this isn't how I talk to people in real life, and like that's what I wanted to try and figure out with Elvis. It's like a fine performance, but I like that approach. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then with Kaylee Spaney, I think like she kind of has a little bit of a Patty Duke thing going on where I'm like, I think you just kind of always will look a little younger than you are.
She looks 12. Like when the movie starts, she looks 12, even though I think she's 25 or something like that.
Yeah. I think she's like 24, 25, but she does look 14. And I think she looks 14 for most of the film. So it's like I think that kind of doesn't help the problem that was already in the script, which is her like transformation into adult Priscilla.
Because she never does, she never becomes adult Priscilla, not exactly anyway.
I do. Okay, we should talk about like what this film looks like though, because I saw it twice. I saw it once with you, and then I saw the press screening of it like a week later. And the second time I was like, I want all of 70s Priscilla's outfits. They're so cute. I was so obsessed with them. But I think the film looks gorgeous. What did you have any takeaways?
I agree. The costumes are all great. Elvis looks, his costumes are very historically accurate. Like you can tell it's Elvis just by his costumes and his family's costumes. And then, of course, Priscilla as the star of the film. All her costumes are fabulous. I think the art direction was like maybe not that great. I didn't feel the majesty of Graceland, but also I think the film is trying to present Graceland as a prison. So maybe that's why the art direction was a little bit understated, like the performances. Because Elvis kind of led a gaudy sort of like glitz life, and it was all about showing his wealth, as I understand him. So I didn't feel that at all in the art direction, especially of Graceland.
Have you been to Graceland? I haven't been there.
No, but just pictures and stuff like that. And saw Baz Luhrmann's version.
That's right. I think there are moments where you can kind of tell. It's like they had 30 days to shoot this in a warehouse in Toronto.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there are, I think it shows two rooms in Graceland, maybe. You know?
Just the dining room and their bedroom. I think that's it.
And like where they watch TV, I guess.
But also that, you know, somebody, I'm sure somebody listening to this is saying, what are you guys talking about? She meant to do that because it's claustrophobic for her. That's why.
It is. Yeah. Like it, that is the point of the film.
Yeah.
That is the point of the film.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there are some shots that like evoke that really well and are like really creative. Like, do you remember the one where she's standing in the window and it kind of pulls back? It does like a Robert Altman zoom out.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that shot. I think that was really nice.
There were a lot of amazing shots. I liked also the scene after she graduates where she tells him she can't come into the graduation because he will steal attention and it will be about him and not about the people graduating. And then Coppola never even goes into the graduation. She follows Elvis, who's standing outside in his car with his pals, and how everybody comes to him, including all the nuns who are just so excited to see him. And I thought that the composition of that scene with him in the center of it and Priscilla, who is supposedly, that's her day, is kind of sidelined. I saw just the composition and the framing of the actors and the way all of that shot was just, it told the whole story in that one scene. And I'm like, all right, I get it. But did we need another, I don't know how long this movie is.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I found like both interesting, frustrating, and fascinating about this movie. It's like, this is the most complete version of Priscilla's side of the story that has probably been told like in a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, like, it is arguably, like, it's about Priscilla, but at the same time, it's sort of, like, not, because, like, everything around her, or, like, everything about her revolves around Elvis. Like, I can't tell you one thing that Priscilla is personally interested in.
Besides
other
Elvis.
Than Elvis, after watching this film.
Totally.
I guess karate, but that's not in it that much.
No, not at all. Also, it comes out of nowhere. You're like, she never even mentioned karate in her life. What's going on?
Which, like, in the book, she talks about it all the time because Elvis did karate. Elvis was obsessed with it. The only reason she started doing it was because he did it.
Yeah.
And then she just, like, took off with it. But, yeah, I found that annoying because I was just kind of like, I lose track of this woman so fast, and I realize like that is part of the point, but like it is so essential to the end of the film to like give her something, you know.
And that's back to my point that I started this podcast with, which is young people's lives are inherently not that interesting because they don't they haven't lived much. She was 14, 15 when she met Elvis, so she really doesn't know much, and to try and tell a story about her, I just don't think is that interesting. Like, I would have loved to see something of like the older Priscilla. Like, you know, I don't
want to see actress Priscilla.
Yes.
She's like on soaps and stuff. I would think that would have been fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, an older Priscilla reflecting on the younger Priscilla and sort of like the juxtaposition of like what she became versus what she was. Because what she was, yes, it's interesting only because Elvis was in it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. So, yeah, I don't know. I liked the movie a lot. I love the soundtrack. I think this is my favorite Sofia Coppola soundtrack.
Are you doing the Aretha Franklin thing of beautiful gowns, beautiful gowns? I love the soundtrack.
No, I wouldn't say I'm doing that. I feel like I've been very critical of this film, but it's only because I've spent literally 2 weeks like thinking about it.
Yeah.
So
tell me about the soundtrack and what you liked about it. I interrupted you.
Oh, well, first of all, I'm like a vintage music girly, you know.
Yes.
I love 50s music, I love 60s music. And that's not something I think Sofia Coppola is necessarily like interested in. When I saw her talk about this at the Strand, she was saying basically like, I don't really like that music. I find a lot of it really corny. So I think she did a really good job of finding either covers of 50 songs that have a little more of a modern feel and kind of like update the sound a little bit, or finding songs that like aren't too childish, I guess. So I think it's just a really nice mix of like adult sounding but kind of youthful feeling songs, with a little bit of a vintage flair, which I really like. So
yeah
it was a good mix to me.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I think the soundtrack was good. So let's talk about the O word, the Oscars. Sofia Coppola is an Oscar winner. She won for the screenplay of Lost in Translation. Marie Antoinette won Best Costumes. But I think that's the end of the story of Coppola and Oscars. Her last few movies haven't been nominated for anything. And I think this movie is going to continue that. Yes. The Academy loves biopic. They love Elvis. But I just don't think this movie is going to get any Oscar nominations.
I think it has a couple in it.
All right. I do. Tell me.
I think it could get a costume nomination.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could get an adapted screenplay nomination. I don't think it should win. But
definitely
I think it could
not
get one.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how things shake out with the actresses, but like, I mean, I didn't love her performance, but I could see people liking it. I think it was like perfectly suited to the film and like good, but I wasn't like, you know, we love actressing, and that wasn't actressing.
Not at all. And I think I just don't see this performance, you know, when Emma Stone is doing all that and Lily Gladstone is in a Scorsese movie.
Well,
and
your question was nominations. I wasn't winning.
No, but even nominations, I just think there is so many people in Best Actress that have a better chance than her. Annette Bening is playing a tough broad who swims. You know, Anjani Ellis is in Origin. Sandra Huller is there with Anatomy of a Fall. There's just so much actressing being done. The most actressing is done by Emma Stone, and that's why she is the front runner, because she does it. She's in every scene and she does it. She talks and she walks. She does it all. So that's textbook thing. And then, you know, Lily Gladstone has the narrative. Another narrative is for Annette, who's never won. I just don't see Kaylee Spaney coming in and being like, oh, I just have lots of big hair on my head and wearing these high heels and vote for me.
My God. The disrespect. No, but it's true. I think you're right. I could see it happening. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I could see it happening. I could see it not happening.
Yes. Yeah.
Because yes, it is a strong year, as we've said in virtually every recent episode.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. I think right now, what would I say? I haven't seen Naiad yet or Poor Things, but like Poor Things seems like a shoe-in.
Mm-hmm.
Lily Gladstone seems like a shoe-in.
Yeah.
Sandra Huller, I'm really hoping.
Sandra Huller, if she wins a couple of critics awards, she'll be in. I think she's in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Naiad like really good? I think
I haven't seen Naiad yet, even though it did play at New Fest where I work. But that was one of the very few films that played at New Fest that I haven't seen. But yeah, I haven't seen it, but I just think the, like Annette Bening, you know, Grand Dame of American cinema, never won an Oscar. Like, that's a lot there.
Okay, but if Annette Bening won for Naiad over Lily Gladstone or Sandra Hüller, I would be mad.
Well, you haven't seen it. Maybe you're going to love it. Maybe it's going to be your favorite performance.
Okay.
And we have, you know,
I will leave myself open to that possibility, but let's just say I'm not confident about that being the case.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't even talked about Margot Robbie, who is in the biggest movie of
the
year.
That's true.
Or Carey Mulligan, who has a textbook Oscar-winning performance and movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I forgot about that film.
Yeah. So all of these
Which says a lot, by the way. Preview for our Maestro episode.
Yeah. All of those people, I think, are ahead of Kaylee Spaney. So, I mean, who knows? But maybe she'll win something like, I don't know, the Gossams or something like that. And that would be
Well, when we left the film, I think I said to you right away, I'm surprised that she won the Volpe Cup.
Yes. And I told you she won because Emma Stone couldn't win because poor things won the Golden Lion and they can't give it Golden Lion and Best Actress.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah. But they can do it at the Oscars. You can win more than one Oscar.
Yeah, that's true.
Or be nominated for more than one Oscar. But anyway, yeah.
Though I've had a lot of criticisms of this movie, I still generally really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have liked most of what I've seen this year, and I'm very happy and excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely better than anything we've seen the last 2 months, I would say, even though I'm not like a big fan of it or anything. Go see Priscilla. I think it's opening wide on Friday. And then let us know what you thought about it. And yep. Until next time, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at I Am Picture Show. I am on Twitter at @ME_says, on an Instagram at @Mortada_E.
And I am BK Rewind on Twitter, BK_Rewind on Instagram, and BKindRewind on YouTube.
And don't forget to read Izzy's fabulous article about Priscilla. We'll link it in the notes of the program.
Yeah, read it. Get a lot of clicks. So then they're like, oh, we'll work with you again.
Yes, let's all do that.
Clicks. Yeah.